A young girl and a woman have been seriously injured after a suspected stabbing in Dublin city centre this afternoon. Two other children were injured in the attack. A suspect has been detained by Gardaí.
5-year-old girl and a woman in her 30s are in a serious condition in hospital following an attack at Parnell Square East in Dublin this afternoon.
A date has been set for the trial of a man charged with the attempted murder of 3 children on Parnell Square in Dublin city. Riyad Bushakar faces 5 other charges, including assault causing serious harm, 3 counts of assault causing harm, and 1 knife offence.
Welcome to All Rise. I'm Aisling Moore, radio producer.
And I'm Frank Graney, News Talk's courts correspondent.
The prosecution's final witnesses were called today, including a forensic scientist who examined the knife Riyad Bushakar is alleged to have used.
The jurors also heard medical evidence from the doctors who treated Leanne Flynn and the most seriously injured child, a 5-year-old girl.
This is All Rise, the Riyad Bushakar trial. Welcome to episode 13, Lifelong and Life Limiting. So the prosecution hasn't formally closed its case, Frank, but as it stands, no more witnesses will be called.
Yeah, that's right. The focus now shifts to the defence, but it's important to remember that the defence is under absolutely no obligation to call a single witness or present any evidence, and the jury mustn't hold that against the accused if they choose not to. So by way of a roadmap, I suppose, of how things will progress from here, some legal argument will be dealt with in the absence of the jury tomorrow. And when the jury returns on Monday morning, the prosecution is then expected to formally close its case. Once that's done, the defence, as I say, will be given an opportunity to go into evidence. If they don't, then we'll have closing speeches from the legal teams, with the prosecution going first, followed by the defence.
Okay, so we're very much entering the final stages of the trial now. So let's talk about the evidence presented today, because it moved away from eyewitness accounts and Garda interviews and instead focused on forensics and the long-term medical consequences for some of those injured in the alleged knife attack.
Yeah, the final chapter, I suppose, of the prosecution's case was presented today. The first witness called was a forensic scientist called Dr. Yvonne O'Dowd. She has worked with Forensic Science Ireland for 20 years. She said that she received some exhibits from the team investigating the alleged attack on Parnell Square, including the chef aide kitchen knife alleged to have been used by Riyad Bushakar, the clothing removed from him at the Mater Hospital, a black jacket, a grey top, black vest and jeans, and also DNA reference samples taken from Mr. Bushakar and his alleged victims.
Dr. O'Dowd's role was to examine the knife and clothing for blood staining, to recover DNA where possible, and compare any DNA profiles generated with the reference samples supplied by Gardaí. In relation to the knife, she described it as a large, black-handled chef aide knife. She said the handle was 12 centimetres long and 2 centimetres wide at its widest point. She also measured the blade. It was 24 centimetres long and 2.5 centimetres wide at its widest point. And there was blood staining on it.
There was on both sides of the blade, but not on the handle. She said that she also noticed what appeared to be biological tissue on the left-hand side of the blade. She examined that under a stereo microscope, under intense light, she said. And while Forensic Science Ireland doesn't have a specific test to confirm tissue, she said that she swabbed it anyway to see if she could recover any DNA from it. Her evidence then dealt with each swab individually. They started with the left-hand side of the blade. She said a sample taken from there generated a DNA profile matching the most seriously injured girl. A sample from the tip of the right-hand side of the blade was also a match for that girl's DNA.
Dr. O'Dowd also took a swab from the centre of the right-hand side of the blade, which produced a mixed DNA profile. From that, she said she was able to identify Leanne Flynn's DNA and the DNA of the second girl Riyad Bushakar is accused of trying to murder. Another sample taken from near the tip of the blade on the right-hand side revealed another mixed profile with Miss Flynn and the most seriously injured girl identified as the main contributors.
That's right. Dr. O'Dowd also examined the handle of the knife. DNA discovered from the underside of it was a match for the accused man, Riyad Bouchaker. She said she then moved on to his clothes. They had been removed from him at the Mater Hospital. She said she found blood staining on the front sleeve and chest area of the black jacket, on the collar and neck area of the grey top, on the front left knee of the jeans that he was wearing, and on the back of the black vest. All of the blood samples she took from those items of clothing were a match for Mr. Bouchaker.
Dr. O'Dowd was cross-examined, and under cross-examination, she confirmed that she found no DNA matches on the knife corresponding to the boy Mr. Bouchaker is accused of trying to murder, or any of the alleged victims in the assault causing harm charges that he has also pleaded not guilty to. And once this witness had finished giving her evidence, the jurors then heard from doctors who treated Leanne Flynn and the most seriously injured girl.
Professor Anne Branigan was the next prosecution witness called. She is a consultant colorectal surgeon. She treated Leanne Flynn following her admission to the Mater Hospital after the alleged attack. Leanne Flynn, as we know, is the childcare worker who was minding the children on Parnell Square that afternoon. Riyad Bouchaker is accused of causing her serious harm. He denies that charge. Professor Branigan described Ms. Flynn as a major trauma patient. She said that she had a major stab wound on her lower back. Her blood pressure, she said, was very, very low at 60 over 40. She said that she was pale and she needed to be given oxygen.
Professor Branigan said she required immediate resuscitation and a chest drain had to be inserted because blood had collected inside her chest cavity and her left lung had collapsed. A CT scan revealed a series of internal injuries. Her diaphragm had ruptured and the scan also showed a severe cut to her spleen. Doctors tried to stop her from bleeding. They attempted to block off the blood supply to the spleen. But in the end, Professor Branigan said she had to make the decision to remove it. She described it as an important life-saving measure because she would have gone into cardiac arrest if they weren't able to stop the bleeding.
The jury then heard about Ms. Flynn's recovery. They heard that she remained in the intensive care unit for a time where she received ongoing monitoring and medication. She was reviewed a few days later and it was decided to insert a feeding tube because she wasn't able to take food through her mouth. Her chest drain was removed on the 2nd of December and Professor Branigan said that she made excellent progress from that point. She was eventually discharged on the 20th of December 2023, which, by coincidence, was the same day Riyad Bouchaker was medically discharged from the same hospital. And as we know, he was then subsequently arrested and taken in for questioning.
In terms of what Ms. Flynn now faces, Professor Branigan said she has a lifelong increased risk of infection. She said she's more susceptible to blood clots and possible hernias. She needs to wear a medical alert bracelet and will have to take certain precautions when travelling abroad because she no longer has a spleen.
That's right. And in terms of her career, the jury has previously heard that she hasn't been able to return to work at the time. As we know, and as I mentioned a moment ago, she was working as a childcare worker. And in relation to her profession, Professor Branigan said that working in a creche is an area where you are exposed to bugs, and people without a spleen sometimes have to be conscious of the type of jobs they go into when there is a risk of picking up bugs or infections. Two final then medical witnesses were called after Professor Branigan finished giving her evidence, both of whom treated the most seriously injured girl, who was just 5 years of age at the time.
Dr. Aoife Mahony was the first of two consultant paediatricians called today, both of whom specialise in the area of neurodisability. Her evidence focused more on the current condition of the most seriously injured girl, the impact of her acquired brain injury, and what her future looks like.
Yeah, she first became involved in the girl's care on the 23rd of January 2025, 14 months after the girl was rushed to hospital, and she explained that she had suffered a penetrating chest injury, which she said resulted in a period during which her brain didn't get the oxygen and blood supplies that it needed. That left her with a severe acquired brain injury. Dr. Mann's role, she said, was to assess the extent of the girl's disabilities, the care she now requires, and what improvements, if any, could be expected in the future.
Dr. Mahoney described her initial neurological presentation as one of low central muscle tone combined with severe dystonia. And she explained that dystonia is a neurological disorder that occurs when communication between the brain and the muscles is interfered with. Instead of sending the correct signals to the muscles, the brain sends abnormal ones, resulting in involuntary contractions and spasms, which can be painful.
That's right. And she told the jury that whenever the girl tries to perform even the simplest of activities, her dystonia frequently intensifies, preventing her from interacting with objects in the way she intends. She said her head control has improved over time and she can sit briefly, but she said she still needs a wheelchair. She also needs a hoist for transfers. She can't stand on her own. She can't bear weight or walk and is fully dependent on carers for all aspects of daily living. Dr. Mahoney went on to say that she can't communicate verbally. She can blink for yes or no questions, but that's it. She said that she can react to and understand certain limited things, like when something fun is pointed out to her in the room. She said her eyes light up and she smiles, but she said if you were to ask her a more complex question, she could find that difficult to follow.
In terms of her nutritional needs, Dr. Mahoney explained that she's fed entirely through a PEG tube, which delivers nutrition directly into her stomach. She finds it hard to coordinate movements of her mouth, and swallowing is a hard and potentially dangerous task for her. Sometimes she occasionally experiences small tastes of food for pleasure, but all of her nutrition, fluids and medication are given to her through the feeding tube.
Dr. Mahoney went on to say that she's currently on 9 different medications, including ones for pain relief and sleep. She now attends a specialised school for children with additional needs. And in terms of the long-term outlook, Dr. Mahoney said that she will require all her current supports for the rest of her life. She said she will never live independently. And while she may continue to make small gains over time, she said that as she grows older, new challenges may emerge, including scoliosis.
Dr. Louise Baker, another consultant paediatrician, then took the stand. She was the final prosecution witness called, and she took the jury through the nature of the girl's brain injury itself, her treatment in hospital in the immediate aftermath of what happened to her, and her prognosis.
Yeah, and she began by describing the girl before the attack as a previously healthy 5-year-old child who had been meeting all of her normal developmental milestones. She explained that she suffered an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest following a traumatic stab wound to the chest. She said the resulting interruption to her blood circulation meant her brain was deprived of oxygen, causing a severe acquired brain injury. She outlined the emergency treatment she underwent. The surgeons had to first stop the bleeding from the stab wound to her chest. And within the first 24 hours after surgery, she said that she developed seizures, severe seizures, a clear sign that the brain had suffered extensive injury due to that prolonged lack of oxygen during her cardiac arrest.
An MRI showed extensive damage throughout virtually every part of the girl's brain. The deepest parts of her brain were particularly badly damaged. She also spoke about the severity of the girl's dystonia, and she described a particularly serious complication known as gut dystonia, which caused such severe pain that the girl had to be readmitted to intensive care on 2 further occasions. Dr. Baker told the jury that gut dystonia would remain a lifelong problem for her. She then went on to describe her current disabilities.
She did, and a lot of what she said in relation to that echoed the conclusions made by Dr. Mahoney. She explained that the brain injury means the girl has virtually no selective control over the movement of her arms or legs. As a result, she said she has no independent mobility. She can't use her hands purposefully. She is nonverbal. She can't swallow safely. She requires feeding through a PEG tube. She can't even swallow her own saliva safely because of those abnormal muscle movements.
In terms of living arrangements, the jury heard the girl's family has relocated to new accommodation so she could live closer to the specialist medical services that she needs. Dr. Baker explained that she needs round-the-clock care.
Yeah, as she put it before the jury, she said the girl is living with a lifelong and life-limiting severe disability. And she finished her evidence today by saying that she will have learning difficulties for the rest of her life.
And she was the last prosecution witness the jury will hear from.
Yeah, I think so. The, as I say, legal argument tomorrow in the absence of the jury, so they won't be required until Monday when the prosecution is likely to formally close its case. No further prosecution witnesses expected. The defence will be then given an opportunity to go into evidence. But again, as we mentioned earlier, they're under absolutely no obligation to do so. And if they choose not to, we should then be hearing closing speeches when the jury returns next week.
And we'll be back on Monday evening to bring you whatever the jury hears as the trial now enters its final stages. But that's it for episode 13 of All Rise, the Riad Bhushikar trial.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow us or subscribe to the podcast.
All Rise, the Riad Bhushikar trial. A News Talk original podcast. Was hosted by Frank Graney and Aisling Moore. Follow the podcast on newstalk.com, on the Go Loud app, or wherever you get your podcasts.